Hello and welcome to the Hope Rehab Mindful Compassion Show. My name is Paul Garrigan and I'm a mindful coach here at Hope Rehab.
I'm Jordan Leaf and I'm a support worker at Hope Rehab.
So this is episode three, and what I'd like to talk about today is dealing with negative emotions like shame and guilt. Now, this can be a big problem for people in early recovery, sort of. You can suddenly be sort of overcome by a real sense of guilt or shame about the past. And sometimes it can be so bad that people just sort of feel there's no real point in going on. My life is ruined. Ring any bells for you, Jordan?
Yeah, definitely. When I came here, I got to a point where I thought, or had started to accept that I was constantly going to be living and carrying this shame and guilt for things that I'd done in the past, in the lead up to being here, relationships I'd destroyed, horrible things I'd said to people, always under the influence of alcohol, and how I was. There was a big fear that I would never be able to get past that.
Because it can sort of really feel like that we've destroyed our life, can't it?
Definitely, I felt that, the shame and guilt of everything that I'd done was like, a dark cloud just following me everywhere I went. Part of what I've got through here, or what I realized, was that even when I wasn't thinking about the shame and guilt, I had anxiety because I felt like a fraud. All that was there. So when I was trying to act like a good, happy person, there was anxiety because people are going to find out all the shameful and horrible things that I've done.
Yeah, it can really sort of that reminds me a lot of so the way I used to feel. Like, I remember I used to find it really hard to sort of look people in the eye, because I sort of felt like they could see through me, and that it was this stench of me that I looked sort of dirty. And I sort of found I hated being around people who I sort of saw as well or well adjusted, because I just assumed that they could sort of see that I wasn't.
Yeah, definitely.
And that sort of even and that sort of went, would go away and come back. That's one of the things I sort of notice sort of here, say in rehab. So people will come here and they're starting to feel hopeful again, and then they start building their life, and suddenly they're overwhelmed by this guilt again. What do you think of that?
Definitely. That's part of the process. You have to face the things that you've done. And that can be very confronting. Some people seem very aware of it when they get here, and a lot of their using appears to have been how they coped with that guilt and shame. Other people sort of haven't faced the awareness of what they've done in the past, and so they have to confront that. But everyone seems to get to a point where they've faced it, realized it, then they hit a wall of, well, how do I get past this? How do I forgive myself?
And that's really important what you just said, because like that is the process. I think we, as we sort of start to get better, become much more aware of the harm we create. And this is especially true for people who start developing compassion. So once we start developing compassion towards ourselves, we start being able to look at our own pain. And as we become aware of our own pain, then suddenly we're aware, well, hold on a second, I've been causing this pain to other people. And we can suddenly be overwhelmed by the stuff we've done.
I think that's part of the realization is sometimes you're aware of the harm you've done yourself, or you're aware of the harm you've done to others. Sometimes not both, sometimes both. And how you then build that compassion towards yourself for forgiveness is incredibly important.
What do you think that maybe some of the time this guilt, or maybe even a lot of the time, that this guilt and shame in sort of early recovery can be a type of self-sabotage?
Yeah, I think a lot of people use it, as you said in the introduction, as the, well, there's no point to be here, there's no getting over it because it's done, and I'm I'm stuck here, so I might as well just go back to my old ways. there's no way for me to get past this, and that's how they mentally feel. I think a lot of it has to do with self-importance as well, in that, you know, believing that the things that you've done were so much more important than they really were in reality.
Yeah, it's a good point, yeah.
So sort of learning to understand that, you know, you're not quite as important as you think you are. Aren't as bad as you think they are. Your head amplifies everything if you let it. So getting past all of that brings you to a point where you can actually start thinking about compassion.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it's like our brain can sort of almost be going looking for ammo to use against us. And one thing that I've sort of come to see through my own practice is that when I'm in a low mood, my brain needs to go find things to justify that low mood. Now, the thing is, low mood is just a part of life. And I could be just feeling low mood because it's just low mood. Like, most of the time, there's not really a reason, but my mind will find a reason. Now, what I see people, when we first sort of give up alcohol, give up drugs, we sort of had this what they call the emotional roller coaster. So you start, which is just part of the process. So people are hitting these low points in their emotional roller coaster, and obviously their brain is looking for some reason to justify why we're feeling so bad. So it comes up with all of these reasons. Oh, it's because you're so terrible. You know, remember the horrible stuff you do. And because we can sort of be overwhelmed by these thoughts, but it's not got nothing really to do with the thoughts. It's just the fact that we're low mood. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I sort of think it's a bit chicken and egg. Sometimes you'll have a thought that you'll manifest and bring you into a low mood. Other times, you know, the low mood will just be there. And I find myself often trying to justify what's the reason, why am I feeling this way. What I've learned to do here and through mindfulness is I can sit with it. Once I've identified it, accepted it, looked at it, it changes. I'd never given it time while I was using, because as soon as I was in a low mood, regardless of what caused it, I went straight to alcohol to fix the low mood. Alcohol will get me through this low mood, and that's what I'd come to believe.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I would sort of, I'm not sure about the thoughts and the low mood, especially a lot of the time, and I'll tell you why. Because one thing I've noticed is that if it really is these stories that's the problem, why didn't I have the story yesterday? Why is this story suddenly, like, why didn't that cause a low mood yesterday? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So it's like when we're in a low mood, it's like suddenly all this stuff appears in my head. But if this stuff is so important, why am I thinking about it all the time?
Yeah.
Why am I only thinking about it when I have low, you know, when the low mood is there?
Yeah.
You know, to me, it just seems so obvious now that, like, it really is the mood that's sort of it's like opening a door for these thoughts.
Yeah.
And it obviously it feels very, very real.
Yeah.
But I always think, and that's how I sort of deal with them, that, well, hold on, if I wasn't thinking about these things yesterday, because these aren't new things. It's not like something has happened today. These are usually stuff from the past. If I wasn't getting all morbid about this stuff in the past, an hour ago or yesterday, obviously it's about something else. And maybe it's to do with the fact that I have this low mood now.
Yeah. I think for me sometimes impermanence and things that are happening, I can talk myself into a low mood. If an action happens, then I will start to futurize the worst case scenario. But that was a lot, was sort of the fears that I needed to learn to deal with here. But yeah, often I'll just wake up with a bad mood and I'll sit and stew in it and turn it into the worst thing in the whole world.
And it can seem so real, can't it?
Oh, completely. Completely. And it's hard to stop once you get into that cycle. You know, knowing how to stop is something that, as an addict, I've never really explored, because my solution it's always the same.
Yeah. But it's really interesting because I do see it like that as well. That so, yeah, all the time we've got these thoughts, like things are being triggered. Someone says something and it triggers a thought. And it's sort of dependent on how we are at that moment, how we react to that thought. So obviously sometimes, I mean, there's going to be some thoughts that's very, very, that easily trigger stuff for us. But in other thoughts, we can sort of easily dismiss.
Yeah.
But if we're in the wrong mood, it's like even a small thing can really, really seem like the end of the world.
Yeah. And like you said before, if you're looking for it, you will find it.
Of course, yeah. Without a doubt. And we can sort of have our mind hardwired to find trouble. And it will find trouble. And it will feel so real. Because once we sort of go into that thought, it completely takes over our mind space. And it can just feel so huge. And that's why I think the idea is about talking to people and like getting a second opinion. Because it can be something very, very silly. And I've seen it here. Something very, very silly. It's not silly to the person, obviously, but I mean, it's not the huge problem that they suddenly think it is, but it can drive someone very, very close to relapse.
Yeah. No, our addict mind and our view of reality, it's distorted. So a small thing can seem like the end of the world because we have trouble seeing the big picture at times.
Yeah. So how do you deal with it? So if that process starts to happen, I think it has, hasn't it, with you a few times?
Yeah, definitely.
How do you get out of it?
For me, it's talking about it to people, getting a better perspective of reality from people that aren't clouded by what's in my mind. Meditation always helps in terms of centering me and allowing me to often explore some of the thoughts or just help me with the mood. And then I use a lot of the mindfulness techniques in terms of looking at what I'm feeling, just identifying it. Okay, that's low mood, that's anxiety. Being aware of what my body's doing allows me to kind of get in and treat it before I allow my head to run wild. So that can be just as simple as, seeing that I'm in a low mood. What does that look like? What does it feel like? Suddenly, it starts to disappear. It starts to lose its power.
Yeah, and we have to sort of technique, and I'm glad you said about the meditation, because I think one of the first things with that type of thinking is to try and take a step back from it, to try and get more grounded in our body. Because the more we're involved in that thinking, we just get more and more carried away with it. But if you can sort of even going for a walk can get us away from that thinking for a while, it can be a huge help. And as you say, sort of speaking to people, all of that's good stuff. Now, there are people as well who have done some pretty terrible things. I mean, how are they to deal with their guilt? I mean, some people will have done very, very terrible things.
I have a philosophy, I suppose, for me that I look at as addiction makes good people do bad things. So it's sort of reconciling that you have a disease and you've done some terrible things while you were active in that disease. The point of rehab or, stopping the addiction is that you do have control, and that monkey that's been on your back can be quietened to the point where you can make rational, normal decisions going forward that, as long as you don't use again, you won't go back to doing those horrendous things. Forgiveness of yourself then is critical because that's when the compassion for others and, most importantly, yourself is needed.
Yeah, and that is very, very valid sort of way to look at it. And I think especially this idea of like what's done is done. And I think the best way that we can sort of make up for the past is not to repeat it. Like, so if it's much better, like, because beating ourselves up, the people we've hurt are not going to get any benefit from us beating ourselves up. It doesn't help them in any way. I mean, if you're genuinely sort of sorry for something, at least change and not let that sort of stuff happen again. And I don't think there's ever a point when we're not salvageable, because there's always a sort of chance to at least in the future, to do something better.
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't mean other people are necessarily going to forgive us. And, you know, for a lot of people, this idea, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic, they're not really going to care. And why should they? You know, for they've been hurt by our action. I mean, I tend to believe that, you know, we pay the price for our action. I don't have to worry about punishing myself, because I believe the universe will punish me. It's not my, you know, that it's my job to learn from mistakes and not repeat them. And one of the things about sort of what I found with developing compassion is that really, we really start to feel the pain of our actions. So I think I told you guys a few weeks ago about this story that happened to me driving home one night from here. I know my story very well, even though I don't think about it too much anymore. But I remember during my teens, my parents grew up and I went to live with my dad. And during that time, I broke into a car and stole some tapes. Now, I've always looked at that story as like, poor me, I was the victim, you know, my parents separated and I obviously went off the rails and I caused a lot of harm. But it was always me that was the victim. Then driving back that night, I suddenly sort of felt what it must have been like for that man to come back into his car and find his tapes have been stolen, and the sort of intrusion and the real sort of horror of that. And I felt really incredibly overwhelmed by it. And like, I sort of stayed there for an hour or two and I just sat with it. But I think in a way, obviously that doesn't make up. But the fact that I really know what that pain is, what he must have gone through, or have a good idea of what he went through, that's much more important than me feeling guilty. Is to appreciate that, you know, we cause pain and to sort of feel that pain. And in some ways, you know, sort of shame can be good in the sense if we're ashamed to do bad. Not ashamed about what we did, but we just don't want to do bad. We don't want to hurt other people because we know what that hurting other people involves, because we don't want to be hurt, so we don't want to hurt other people.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, and it's what a lot of people miss sometimes is that, you know, their actions are impacting other people. Realizing that, showing compassion for the things that you've done to others, showing compassion to them for what they've felt, is part of that step to acceptance of what's happened, acceptance of what you did. Then you can move to, you know,
exactly,
working out ways of forgiveness for yourself and making the amends that you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. Because, yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, that's really correct. I think there has to be more to this than just saying, well, you know, I was sick and I screwed up. I don't think that's enough.
No.
I think you're right. You know, I think we do need is to sort of understand, well, you know, there's usually a price to pay. And we sort of say, I'm willing to, you know, we don't have to beat ourselves up. We just say, you know, whatever price there is to pay for my bad behavior in the past, you know, I pay it, you know, it's the least I can do. But that's all we have to do. We just have to be willing to sort of take the consequences. We don't have to, you know, beating ourselves up, feeling guilty. That's nothing. That's not dealing with the consequences. That's almost like magical thinking. Like, oh, maybe if I beat myself up enough, I'll get out of this. I won't be punished. No, you're still, you know, the sort of the negative response to what we've done is still going to be there.
And I think one of the interesting things you see people struggle with is that self-forgiveness, but they would 9 times out of 10 have forgiven someone else who's done exactly the same thing to them, but they can't forgive themselves.
Exactly, and that's a really, really good point. That's sometimes if you sort of think first, well, imagine it's not me. Imagine it's my friend coming to me and telling me about how guilty they're feeling. What would I say to them? Because we're usually very good at giving this type of advice to other people. Like, would you sort of say to your friend, oh, you know, your life is screwed now. You might as well just go back to taking drugs because, you know, you've completely blown it. You wouldn't say that to your friend. Unless you were a bit of a psycho, but generally you wouldn't sort of say that to your friend. You'd sort of say, no, you know, you're doing the right thing now. If we can give that advice to somebody else, why can't we give the same advice to ourselves?
And then, it's the interesting thing that you see so many people in recovery struggling with. You know, where do they find that forgiveness that they're holding, or the expectations and the standards that they hold themselves to are so much higher than they hold others. And it can keep them in addiction.
And it really can, that's why you have to be careful as well, because it really can be a form of self-sabotage. And the scary thing about self-sabotage, it's not like we sort of consciously do it. And it's exactly to what I'll go back to what I was feeling earlier. We're feeling really desperate to use again. And we need an explanation to explain why we're feeling that way. We'll come up with excuses. I need to give in to that because, you know, all because of A, B, and C, because I'm such a bad person. Ah, that's okay then I can do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, your mind is so clever with addiction, it, you know, it will find any excuse it possibly can to get you to use again.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you see the tricks.
And we have to, it's like we have to find a way to sell it to ourselves. Like, otherwise, because we like to think of ourselves as rational people. We can't sort of say, oh, yeah, I went to rehab, but then suddenly I got this idea I'd use again and I did that. No, we have to have a more elaborate story. Oh, you know, I was suddenly overwhelmed by how much I'd hurt other people and I felt so bad about it. I drank or I used again. Like, no, you didn't. That was just your mind just trying to justify what you decided to do. Yeah. So I hope that made sense today. Join us again next week. So goodbye from me, Paul Garrigan.
And goodbye from me, Jordan.